This is an ABC podcast.
Resorts, homes and a newly built hospital have been washed away.
I'm just holding on for dear life here. This isn't fun.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Save what for dream. You must ready.
Helping your community.
Helping your family.
Helping you.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Bulubinaka. I'm Josiah Nanunga, based in Fiji.
Hi, I'm Fred Hooper, based in Australia.
And this is Pacific Prepared. This show aims to interweave traditional knowledge and climate change, helping you to be ready for any disaster.
Through stories and Talanoa from the Pacifica. On today's show, scientists are looking deep into the ocean over a volcano site near Tonga, hoping to find clues that might lead to better early warning systems.
Also, covering the Pacific Islands Forum, it's not just the leaders that come from right across the Pacific for the event. And in Mataniwai Village, Fiji, logging activity is causing erosion and increasing the risk of flooding that is changing life for almost every villager. That's all coming up. This is Pacific Prepared.
I'm just holding on for dear life here.
For women, it's always safety first. They are the first responder. You're listening to Pacific Prepared.
We probably all remember the volcanic eruption in Tonga in early 2022.
And that's what everyone will remember. But the eruption didn't start there. It started deep in the ocean, right to the ocean floor, back in late 2021.
There might have been signs underwater, and we're not scientists by any means, so we don't know exactly what they might have been, but those small signs soon became a huge eruption and tsunami.
Yeah, absolutely, Fred. Now, while the ocean is calm again, scientists have a new way to actually measure those tiny changes that might indicate an eruption. And Tonga Broadcasting Commission journalist Liliani Polutele has this story for us.
In the aftermath of the Hunga Tonga Hunga Abai volcanic eruption in January 2022, Japanese research institutions are leading a new science and technology research partnership for sustainable development project. The goal is to develop advanced early warning systems to help reduce the risks associated with volcanic eruptions and tsunami disasters. The project focuses on enhancing the study of volcanic activity, improving monitoring and forecast technologies, and strengthening regional cooperation with the Southwest Pacific. This is part of their effort to help all vulnerable countries become better prepared for similar disasters in the future. The January 2022 eruption had global impact, acting as a wake-up call for the need for better disaster preparedness. Professor Mie Ishihara from Japan's Earthquake Research Institute Volcano Research Center spoke with Tonga Broadcasting Commission about the project. She explained that preparations for the project began in 2023 with experimental research starting in May 2024 as part of a five-year research initiative.
This particular time, I have two projects. The one is seismic observation using fiber optical cable. And this is a very new technology. In Tonga, there are many ocean volcanoes, but it's very difficult to put seismic stations close to the volcanoes because there's no land or nobody is living there. We can use the existing submarine cable used for communication, and there is a technology to use this cable as many seismometers along the cable. So with the collaboration with Tonga Cable and Tonga Geology, we install one special equipment at the Tonga Cable Land Station, And now this equipment is measuring the fiber vibration all along the cable. And okay. This detects signals from the volcanoes. Okay. We use the existing commercial cable thanks to the collaboration with Tonga Cable Company.
Yes.
And compared with usual seismic observation for volcanoes, it's very efficient and low cost,
okay.
And easy to operate. But
okay.
Still, it's under the development.
Yeah. Okay.
So this time it's experiment, and we do not have a technique to use this method for real-time monitoring. But using the data obtained by this experiment, we will develop the method so that we can operate this monitoring in real-time.
Although the technology is still in development, an experiment has been conducted. However, a real-time monitoring system is not yet available, but the team is actively working on its development based on experimental data. Professor Ishara also shared that the project includes several components, one of which involves surveying Tonga's tsunami history. This aims to distinguish between tsunamis caused by earthquakes and those triggered by volcanic activity, providing vital data for public awareness and disaster preparedness.
Yeah, this project includes many components, not only the seismic observation along the cable, but one group is surveying tsunami history in Tonga or in this region. Mm-hmm. And they want to distinguish tsunamis generated by earthquakes or tsunami generated by volcanoes.
Okay.
And they want to complete the history of tsunami in the past 2,000 years.
Okay.
And this knowledge is also very important to think once earthquake or volcanic eruption happened, based on the past record, what kind of tsunami will arrive to Tonga, or how seriously we have to disseminate the warning like this. The mm-hmm. information will be used as a reference to make a decision. And this is another purpose, and also collecting all the research knowledge from geology or from monitoring. We want to work with TGS, TMS, and the RMO to consider what is the best way to reduce the tsunami damages.
She further emphasized that the project will involve collaboration with universities and the research will be used for educational purposes, particularly in the field of geoscience. Public engagement is also a priority, with open campus events to involve the local community. The project also includes two other countries, Vanuatu and Fiji, due to their vulnerability to similar natural disasters.
Malo, and thanks to Pacific Prepared reporter and Tonga Broadcasting Commission senior journalist Liliane Polutele for that story from the Kingdom of Tonga.
The time to prepare is now, not right before an emergency.
No electricity, nothing whatsoever.
You are listening to Pacific Prepared.
Take a look around you right now, wherever you are. There's probably something that's made from timber. We use it in furniture, we use it for large buildings, and the structures of our homes, of course. We need it. And so do other countries around the world too. In the Pacific, countries need to export timber. It's one of the major ways that they make money, Joe.
Indeed, Fred. I remember when I visited the Solomon Islands a few months ago, I heard that logging, not only the Solomon Islands, even in Fiji, logging is one of their main sources of income. Even here in Fiji, we continue to export timber. And it's all made possible with the continuation of the supply of logs from hinterlands from the interior of Fiji.
Yeah, which is surprising, I think, maybe surprising to some people, that's for sure. And while it's great for the country to be making money, but when you remove a large number of trees like that, it also has other impacts as well, like soil erosion.
Exactly. And not just that, logging can also increase the risk of worsened flood by making nearby rivers or creeks much more shallower, which increases the chance of flooding during heavy rain. But we should also acknowledge and thank those who continue to practice logging responsibly by replanting trees at the same time. So after cutting down, replant. After cutting down, replant. I also take my hats off to the people who are doing that.
Yeah, I guess it's a sustainable way of operating, that's for sure. And that's one of the challenges that's faced by a village of the province of Motuwatā in Fiji. The village is called Matanui, and we'll be hearing more from the village's Turani Koro, or headman, Osea Lotiki, who will tell us more about their situation.
Bolivinaka, my name is Osea Lotiki from Matanui village. This village is 15 kilometers away from Lambasa town. Geographically, is the village consists of more than 200 people, more than 30 household, and the challenge we face is the rise of sea level, and of course, soil erosion.
So the Turani Koro talked about the location of the village away from Lambasa town, and Lambasa town sits within the Motuwatā province. Turani Koro, you mentioned about erosion. What is the root cause?
The root cause of erosion is deforestation from upper stream from Sevadi, and the villages in the upper stream of our river, Mbudesau River. Our village is located on the downstream. That's why we face erosion.
The cutting down of trees, deforestation, has been taking place in the upper part of this area, and now the villages of Matanui are experiencing the consequences of that particular activity. Any consultation or the involvement of government with the relevant government department, such as the Ministry of Environment, to try and counter this issue?
Of course, we have worked together with the Ministry of Forestry, have been supplying seedling such as vesi and sandalwood, and we have planted more than 1,000 of trees so that we can combat the soil erosion and protect our area.
And these are native trees that is quite strong and is well renowned here in Fiji, vesi and yasi, or sandalwood. This particular initiative, this tree planting initiative, also contributed to the 30 million trees to be planted, the target that was set forth by the government to be achieved over the next few years. With the issue at hand, what are some of the discussion or the plans the village elders together with the villages have put together to ensure that it doesn't take its toll in the near future?
We have been working together with the Motuwatā Provincial Council, together with the women's group in our village and the youth group for the Job for Nature. So we've been planting the fruit trees to combat this issue. And of course, it will be a generate income for our future generation. And looking ahead for our village, we've been working together every Monday to plant the trees, especially on the hilltop and the mangrove on the shore.
As soon as I entered the village, I noticed that there were a few houses being built further inland. Is that another initiative to ensure that the villages remain protected?
Yes, of course, because during the flood, during Cyclone Yasa, three or four houses near the shore have been flooded, and our discussion was to move or build the houses away from the Mbudesau River, so we are protected and we are safe.
That decision was collectively agreed by all members of the village.
Yes, that all was agreed by the village, and we have worked together to build the house. As you can see, we build the house that can withstand category 5 cyclone. One of the house is there for my sister. If a category 5 cyclone approaches, we can move to that house. And you can see another one is on the inland, that side, for the betterment of our village.
Talking about tropical cyclone, what has been some of the most severe and devastating tropical cyclone that you, as a village, Torangalikoro, has ever encountered in recent years?
About a cyclone, the devastating one was Yasa on 2019, December. The only thing we learned from it was to the location of the houses near the Budesau River, and that's why we have planned to move the house so we can solve the problem of flooding. And cyclone, we have to build the house to withstand the category 5 wind. And of course, we are working hand on hand with a disaster management program. If a cyclone is approaching, there will be an announcement in the village so we can move to the evacuation center. That is our church. And right now, there is no evacuation center. We are using the church as our evacuation center.
So there is no standard evacuation center here at Mataniwai village in the district of Lambasa, the province of Mathwata. And that will lead me to the next question. There might be some people in authority within government who are listening in right now, or even people from within the district or the village of Mataniwai who are listening in right now to ABC Radio Australia. What is your message or the plea from the villagers?
It's paramount, or it's my plea that the government to build a category 5 or 6 evacuation center in Mataniwai so that the village will be safe. Because right now there is no evacuation center. I am requesting the government, please come to Mataniwai, help us to build the evacuation center so we can be protected by the cyclone in future.
And that was Mr. Osea Lautiki, the Torangalikoro of Mataniwai village in the district of Lambasa, the province of Mathwata in the northern part of Fiji. Thank you so much. Pinakapakalebu for your time.
Nawalebu.
Disaster is part of our life, and recovering is also part of our life.
As you see, they're smiling despite the devastation. That's how we are.
You are listening to Pacific Prepare.
Every year, countries from across the Pacific come together for a meeting. It's always in a different country, and it's called Pacific Islands Forum, or PIFS. It's a place to talk about challenges and a place or an avenue to talk about how countries might work together to fix some of the pressing issues they are facing. Along with the leaders of the Pacific countries, journalists and reporters from right across the Pacific or the region also gather to cover the event. This year, the meeting is in Suva, Fiji, and it's called Pre-Conference of the State Parties. One of the journalists who has traveled to Fiji this week is familiar, no stranger, to Pacific Prepared. Welcome back to the show, Jeremy Guao.
Hello, Joe. Welcome back. It's nice to be here face-to-face, Joe. After all the virtual meetings and call-outs, I think it's good to have a face-to-face. But yeah, I think being here, it's a real good pleasure, back in Suva.
But this particular meeting is different from the usual Pacific Islands Forum, right?
Yes, it's quite different. It's like a separate component of it. And so we're talking about all this architecture of, you know, regional Pacific Islands, but it's more focused on corruption itself. Like I mentioned earlier, it's basically something sort of like we try to find mechanisms that, you know, should be in place, or how can we dealt with all these corruption activities or issues in around the country, not only for Solomon Islands basically, but also for the region. And I think corruption is one of the main, you know, issues that, you know, it's also contributing to a lot of, you know, developments, especially when we say, you know, disaster, climate change. Those are sort of like challenges that people come out with, but then, you know, corruption, like I've make mention on an example, like there's like a leakage somewhere with the pipe where, you know, funds supposed to come down to, you know, the rural people especially.
Pacific Prepared, it's all about climate change, disaster readiness or preparedness. Mm. Any talks or part of the agenda for this particular meeting, you know, things that are related to this subject?
I think when we say like preparedness, I think sort of when we also put corruption inside or incorporate it inside, I think it's sort of like to get people aware of, you know, there's sort of like, when it comes to disaster, you know, there's sort of like standards in place that, you know, people need to understand, you know, where to reach out, you know. There's sort of like funds in place that people need to, you know, access it, instead of just being there, you know, struggling and sort of. So when we talk about preparedness, when it comes to corruption and sort of like, you know, funds related, when we say corruption, it's just the system needs to understand. We need to understand the system, and also it's also something more of a awareness, you know, we're getting people prepared. Mm-hmm. For example, when we talk, like I've mentioned, like when we talk about climate change preparedness and sort of, we need to get awareness to the people to understand how's the system go, and people need to aware of how the system being corrupt or not corrupt. Yeah.
So you've been covering this sort of like regional meetings over the years. You'll be able to gauge and try and measure the effectiveness of some of the topical pressing issues being discussed in recent or previous regional meetings. So when it comes to disaster preparedness and climate change, so far, do you think whatever is being talked about, being part of the deliberation, is actually applicable and is effective?
I think one of the biggest milestones that will be happening this year was to have the signing of the Pacific Resilient Facility, the PRF, which was last year was announced that it was based in Tonga. It's basically more of, you know, addressing climate change in the whole regional structure. But looking at this, you know, leaders coming together, deliberate on climate change, and sort of like having this small impacts like the signing, probably it's a good way forward, especially it's a good sign that, you know, leaders are actually pushed for the better state of Pacific Islands or Pacific region in terms of climate change. And having this sort of like two countries are also pumping in money already, it's giving us, you know, oh, leaders are accountable for all this. The one behind it is that how do we facilitate these funds or separate it, or how do I put it, like put it in a fair share, or how do we share this cake fairly for all the countries? That's the main challenges now that we're looking at. By listening to leaders, how they're going to come in and then, you know, give a fair share for everyone when it comes to funds like that. But then with the forum, leaders meeting, having these dialogues on climate change and preparedness, I think one of the biggest successes for this year that everyone is anticipating now is the Pacific Resilient Facility that will be signed in Solomon Islands come this September. So that's the biggest milestone for every CSO, stakeholders, and sort of like journalists that we're covering, you know, most of these stories.
Mr. Guo, before we wrap up, you know, as a reporter also covering climate-related stories, what would you hope for the leaders, for those who are spearheading this sort of forum, regional meetings, to actually achieve or to do to ensure that whatever they're doing is actually doing justice for the Pacific Islanders?
I think from my take, last year, you know, the leaders head out to some sort of like some remote communities that are affected by the tsunami, and also for, you know, the I think it was also an earthquake. So having this leader go, having these leaders going out to rural communities, have an interaction, listen to their stories, probably it might give a way to what we journalists try to give every day. Or, you know, we report a lot of, about climate change, but they see it on the TV, see it on, you know, paper and sort of. But then having themselves going out to the communities, probably it's a good way of, you know, shedding lights on that. So that's something that Solomon Islands is looking at. From what I heard is that they're going to plan something out for the leaders to go out to, you know, for us in Solomon Islands to go out to communities to, you know, have a... See, yes. So that's basically something that I feel like with my observation, having all these talks without reaching people, you know, coming down to people is one of the best thing to, you know, having the weight of what we try to preach every day when it comes to reporting. Yeah, having themselves look at what we're trying to portray or shed light on it. So that's something that I'm anticipating. I'm looking forward for this particular PIFs in Solomon Islands, yeah.
You correctly stated about the need for people who are spearheading or the mastermind there for all these initiatives to come down to the vulnerable community members. Have a talk with them, have a talanoa, try and contextualize. Put themselves in their shoes, the issues they plight every day when it comes to the issue of climate change, rising sea levels, coastal inundation, coastal flooding, and of course some of the implications of natural disasters in recent years. Well, that's a brief conversation with Mr. Jeremy Gow here in Suva, Fiji. He's here to cover a meeting that's happening at the Pacific Islands Forum. Mr. Gow, thank you to us. Thank you so much, Pinakapakalim, for your time, and enjoy your time here in Suva, Fiji.
Thank you too much, Joe. Thank you.
The time to prepare is now, not right before an emergency.
No electricity, nothing whatsoever.
You are listening to Pacific Prepared.
Wrapping up another episode of Pacific Prepared this week. Thank you so much, Pinakapakalevo, for always listening in, hearing all the talanoa, the stories from right across the Pacific. Fiji, Tonga, Solomon Islands, Vanuatu, Tuvalu, and Pacific greetings as well. And Pinakapakalevo to our listeners from right across the Pacific.
Pinaka, thanks for your help again, Joe, and thanks for you for listening to another episode this week of Pacific Prepared. Always appreciate it. Thanks, Joe. I'll talk to you again soon, no doubt.
You're most welcome, Fred. Yeah, I'll talk to you next week. Same time, same place. Until then, stay safe. More than wonder.
Vinaka. Thanks, Joe.
Pacific Prepared.
This show was made on the lands of the peoples of Stony Creek Nation in Lutruwita, Tasmania. Also the people of the Vanua Uviti. Pacific Prepared is supported with funding from the Australian Government's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Any views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the Australian Government. It's produced and distributed in partnership with Radio Australia and networks across the Pacific, including Radio New Zealand Pacific, National Broadcasting Corporation of Papua New Guinea, Palau Wave Radio, Fijian Broadcasting Corporation, Samoa National Radio 2AP, Solomon Islands Broadcasting Corporation, and Tonga Broadcasting Commission. My name's Fred Hooper, and thanks to my co-host in Fiji, Josina Nunga. Please share any information you've learned today, and stay safe. This has been Pacific Prepared.
In the Fale is a music show on ABC Radio Australia, hosted by me, Paola Tukefu. I'll be spinning my favourite tunes from dancehall to disco, calypso to country, reggae to roots, and hip-hop to house music, from across the eras to keep the kids and the aunties happy. If it has a pumping groove, I'll be bringing it to you to bump you into the weekend.
Search up In the Fale to listen online or find it in the ABC Listen app.